You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
And that was Aqualung with Strange and Beautiful. And welcome to the Stone Tapes. In the studio today, we have the lovely George Mann.
Hello, hello.
We have the amazing Patricia H. Ash.
Hi.
We have Alex, our fantastic producer, of course. He can wave because he's not allowed to speak on the show. He's waving for those who can't see him. And, of course, on the phone today for the whole show, which is amazing, is Robin Pearce. How's the view from your castle?
I am done waving.
You're waving as well. Great. Good to have you here, Robin.
Thank you.
Anyway, so the whole focus of the show today is a little bit different from some other shows we've done. We've got some witchy music, you'll notice, and we're going to be talking about sort of new films that we've seen. Quite a lot of stuff we've been watching on Netflix, actually, but other download streaming facilities are available. So first of all, we're going to go over to George himself for The Man Factor.
Hello, hello. Well, I'm not so much on a witchy theme, but there is a horror theme going through with what I was going to talk about today, which is narrative board games. I'm not sure if any of you guys are aware of the kind of the massive rise that these games have been having recently, particularly on Kickstarter, where it seems to be the thing to do if you want to go and make money. Two recent projects on there that I've backed have been Dark Souls, the board game based on the video games, which made $3.77 million in a month on Kickstarter.
Wow, that's a massive amount of money.
I know, it was stupid amounts of money. And then another recent one called The Rise of Moloch, which is a steampunky one, which obviously appealed to me because of my background. That was finished last week, and it made, $1.2 million.
Wow.
So it's smaller scale than Dark Souls, but still, we're talking huge amounts of cash. And I've always been really interested in games like that. And recently, because my son's turned 13, I've actually got a kind of captive audience of someone who has to play it with me. I've been buying some of them. and actually, James has really got into them as well. So we've been exploring some of these different games. And it's been a fascinating thing to kind of look at how people tell stories in a different way. One of the games we've been playing a lot is called Elder Sign, and it's a Cthulhu game.
I've heard of that one, I think.
Yeah, it's great. It's quite easy to pick up and play, but it's a card and dice game. So essentially, the core box gives you the Miskatonic Museum and a bunch of investigators to explore, and you're using cards to turn over locations, and then you're encountering creatures, and you have different sets of dice, quite a lot of different dice of different colours, and you're rolling dice to try and match the dice to what's on the cards to banish the monsters. And you're doing all of this before one of the great old ones awakes. There's kind of a cardboard clock, and every turn it's ticking forward, and every day at midnight the doom track moves forward, and the great old one gets one step closer to waking.
Brilliant.
But what I love about it is the way it becomes a kind of cooperative story, because you're exploring the museum together, and you're working together against the game, and it's no game's ever the same, because there's different monsters in different locations, and there's so many different locations because you're using cards instead of a board that the game's always different. And one of the other things that these games do very well is kind of launch expansion packs. So we've just bought one that kind of, you get rid of all the cards and you put new sets of cards in.
Wow.
And you're going to Alaska to look for strange Yeti creatures. And,
so you're
and
gonna get a completely different game.
Completely
again.
Different game. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, using the same kind of investigators and the same core setup. So that's been a lot of fun to play.
Sounds a bit like Pandemic, which is something that we've recently bought, and we've recently been playing a lot, where you're scientists at the CDC, and everybody's got a different role, and there's like a quarantine specialist and a researcher, and they can all do different things, and they have you are all a team, and you're against four diseases. You have to cure all four diseases. Don't have to eradicate them yet, just have to cure them. That's really, 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 really hard.
They're really intelligent
games,
aren't they?
There's a lot of kind of complicated dynamics to them. And in fact, Pandemic have just done a legacy edition.
Yeah,
they've
got several different editions. There's one that looks kind of steampunky.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got, instead of the whole world, you've got the Iberian Peninsula. So Spain and France and all that interesting stuff. And I think you've probably got trains and whatever.
So lots of travelling, sort of metaphorical travelling, shall we say.
Yeah.
Robin, have you heard of any of these?
Actually, no, I haven't.
Are you into gaming at all?
Bits and pieces here and there. My biggest accomplishment last year was actually playing Monopoly for the first time. But it was a DC Comics version of Monopoly.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a plethora of different Monopolies now, isn't there?
Yeah.
The Simpsons,
yeah, there are.
And Star
you can buy Welsh ones, you can buy Marvel Comics ones.
Yeah.
God, you can everything. It's but I'd never actually played it before, and I couldn't understand how I managed to get to the age of 57 without ever playing Monopoly.
I'm really amazed at that,
actually.
I'm really amazed. I thought everyone had done Monopoly at some point. Well, have you played any other kind of board games, though, Robin, or is it just something you never did?
Not something that we used to do much as a family when I was growing up. We would play things like the odd game of, Mousetrap and Cluedo and stuff like that. As far as video games are concerned, I play sort of one-on-one racing games with my son, and we, of course, Mortal Kombat and Injustice and stuff like that, where we can just hammer the living heck out of each other.
That's all for the good. There's an interesting, another interesting kind of development in board games and computer games recently, which is a company called Fantasy Flight Games, who do a lot of the games that I play, have started doing apps for all their board games.
Oh, wow.
So there's two that I'm aware of. One that I've got is called Descent, and it's like a dungeon crawl. So you're playing a character, and there's a dungeon tiles to lay out, and monsters, and a quest. And essentially, in the standard version of the game, one of the players has to be not so much the dungeon master, but has to be the baddies and kind of looks after controlling the monsters and laying out the dungeon and everything. But you can now download this app which does it for you.
Oh.
And it's absolutely brilliant. So James and I, kind of, we're both player characters. We're playing against the app. We prop the iPad up.
That's great.
And it says, put this tile next. And then the goblin appears.
Oh.
And you put the goblin model on, and it tells you where the goblin moves.
How does the app know where you're up to? I mean, is it just running a sort of sequence?
It's kind of running a sequence, and then you're interrupted by going, right, it'll say, now it's your turn to move. So you move, and then you say, right, we've now had our turn. And it says, right, now
so
the
you
goblin
have to,
will
you
move.
You have to interact with it then.
Yeah, so you have to just tap the screen a couple of times and it'll tell you every now and then to roll a dice or whatever. But it's been brilliant. And I know they've done it with another Cthulhu game, Mansions of Madness, which is similar sort of setup where your investigator is exploring a haunted kind of Cthulhu house.
Mm.
And there's an app for that as well, which is controlling the house. And that's kind of on my hit list of things to check out.
I can really see the appeal of these, because I'm not a big gamer in any shape or form, to be honest. Even board games, we do play them a little bit at Christmas at David's families. I'm really into it, and I often think, I'm too tired now, I've had too much wine for this. But actually, gaming as such, whether it's playing on an Xbox or a PS or whatever you're doing, or even a box match board game, would appeal to me more than actually playing... On a device.
There's something tactile about it, and I don't know. It feels finite in a way that I struggle with computer games, because a video game these days is such an investment of time.
Yes. I'm rubbish at video games.
I love them. I absolutely love them. But it's
I love
the time.
Them, but I keep running into walls. Can't even play Mario Kart.
This is the story of my life. I can't do it either.
Can't even play Mario Kart. I keep falling off the track. Even in tracks where you're not supposed to be able to fall off of them.
I'm useless. There's one on my phone, there's some games, and some once or twice I've tried to play them, and I just have no sort of reflexes or whatever it is you need to do these things. What about you, Robin? Are you any good at those sorts of games?
I like to play Tetris sometimes. I loved Space Invaders, but then the whole industry kind of left me behind. But
yeah, I think that was me.
Listen to what George said. There's stuff out there that I really should be checking out.
Yeah, I have to recommend this stuff. I mean, you know, I say I don't have a limited amount of leisure time, as it were, but it's something that James and I do together, and, you know, it only takes the two of us, especially these games where you've got the app being a third character, I suppose, really. And it's kind of, it feels to me a bit like a hybrid of a role-playing game and a board game, but, you know, you can go, right, we're going to play a game that's going to take an hour and a half, Saturday afternoon, clear the table, go for it before dinner, and it's brilliant.
Brilliant. I think we're going to have a little listen to Witchy Woman, the Eagles.
Sparks fly from her fingertips. Echoed voices in the night. She's a restless spirit on an endless flight. Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies. Ooh, witchy woman, she got the dancing.
with that fantastic drum roll, we're over to Patricia's Corner. Patricia, what have you been reviewing this week?
Well, I have been reading Pantomime by Laura Lamb. I was walking through Waterstones, and there was this book. It's black, and it's got these trapeze artists on it. It's absolutely gorgeous cover, so I was like, oh, that looks interesting. I picked it up. I read the back. It was interesting. I bought it, and now I'm reviewing it. So it is one of the most awesome debut novels I've ever read.
Wow.
Because apparently Laura Lamb has never written anything else besides this. I want her to write lots more, especially a sequel to this, because that would be awesome. That would be definitely awesome. Anyway, so I should probably tell you about the book, huh?
Yeah.
So Micah Gray is the main character. And Micah Gray has run away to the circus. Maybe I can speak words now.
can you do English?
Yeah. American.
Sort of. I can sometimes do English. So Micah's real name, because Micah's not a real name, is Iphigenia.
Oh.
Or Jean for short. And Iphigenia, or Jean for short, is a noble lady. Well, the daughter of... Her parents are trying to make her be noble lady-like. And that doesn't really work because Micah, or Jean, is neither male nor female.
Ah, I see.
He is... they're both.
Ah, so he's a hermaphrodite.
Yeah, he's a hermaphrodite. And
right, she is a hermaphrodite.
They, because from reading the book, Micah doesn't identify as... It's not like, oh, I'm definitely one or I'm definitely the other. Micah is very much stuck in the middle. And it was really interesting to see that story of this person who's stuck in the middle. Their old life, their new life, male, female, what is going on?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was really fascinating. And, I mean, you could write a thesis on this book. But it's not like a scholarly, talky sort of book. It is a really interesting story. And what you've got is the segments. It's like there's two parts. Micah before Micah ran away when she was Jean, and then Micah at the circus where he's Micah.
Ah.
So then those parts aren't like separated in a chronological way like many books would do. They're sort of shuffled into each other. like a pack of cards.
So just
instead.
Posed next to each other.
Do they
have any kind of connection to each segment then?
A little bit. It's mostly just chronological. It'll go spring the before.
And then
summer, where he's at the circus.
Right, I see.
So it's really It really, really works for this story because the reader is caught between the past and the present, like Micah is caught between the past and the present. So it really, really works.
Interesting.
Yep.
And can I ask, is Micah's portrayed? Are they portrayed as happy with their gender identity, or is it a search for?
It's both. I think. Micah is happy to be Micah, whatever that is, neither one nor the other. The reason that Micah has run away from home is that her parents were going to force her to have an operation to just be
right,
a she.
Okay.
Right.
And that didn't feel right at all.
Right.
That is not a good thing. So she ran away and joined the circus and is kind of finding herself...
How does the writer deal with the he/she question then? Because
it's told in the first person, so we never see the pronouns.
So no one ever refers to Micah as a he or she.
Well, they do because when Micah is at the circus, Micah is passing for completely male.
Right.
And when Micah is Jean in her previous life,
she's dressed as
a female, trying to. She feels really awkward. As a noble lady.
Yeah.
Really, really awkward. And she feels more free as Micah.
Yeah.
But she doesn't feel completely male either. So, really interesting. And it's a sort of a steampunk world, so it's a bit Victorian-esque. It's this archipelago of islands. And there's one which is
totally in no way Great Britain at all that totally rules the rest of them in this empire. so there's bustles and corsets and very strict gender roles, mm-hmm. which I think is a really great setting for this, this sort of story.
Would you say that the book then is a metaphor for somebody in that situation where they don't, they're not in the body they want to have, perhaps? Or being forced to conform to.
It's likely that it is. Mm. And you could read it that way, but you don't have to read it that way. You could just read it as a really interesting story. But I read it that way. Then, yeah. And that's why I think somebody should do their master's thesis on this.
It's fascinating.
It's really good.
Robin, what do you think of it? What do you think of it by the sound?
Well, my question has just been answered by Patricia, because I was trying to figure out how do you tell whose voice is speaking in which narrative.
Mm.
But I get it. It's intriguing.
It is.
It's something that I haven't read. Mm. Maybe I should.
I'm borrowing it. I'm taking it away to Los Angeles. Los Angeles with me next week.
That's
it doesn't look very interesting. She does. We've already had this discussion. So I'll let you know. Maybe we'll pass it around with all the team.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
The incantations I read run past my eyes. They weigh down my tongue as I speak. I visualize, I give.
That was Strange Beauty by Lindsay Gold. Now, Patricia, George and Robin, I've been watching a lot of stuff on Netflix recently.
Me too.
And I know Patricia and I have both been watching the same thing. A new series came out this week and it's called...
The Santa Clarita Diet. Don't run away. It has absolutely nothing to do with Well, okay, it has stuff to do with food, but it's not a cooking show or a diet show. It's about a zombie.
And it's a very unusual zombie, isn't it?
Yeah.
The way it happens.
I've never seen a transformation quite like that.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very vivid.
It stars Drew Barrymore. And basically, she is a real estate agent with her husband. And she suddenly, showing people around the house in the first episode, gets sick. And she projectile vomits in the living room. And then everywhere.
A lot.
And I mean, you might as well say, take a hose to it, you know.
Oh, really? Like,
it was so bad.
The cleaning crew did.
Style.
Yes.
Because the next time they show that house, it's spotless. Wow.
They did an amazing
job. I want that
carpet. So what do you think of it, Patricia?
I love it. 10 out of 10, absolutely. I just wish there were more episodes, because there's only 10, and they're very short. It's like Modern Family length, only about 30 minutes.
Yeah. Have you seen all of it now?
Unfortunately, yes. I binged way too much on Netflix last week, and it's really easy to binge watch this whole thing in about 2 days.
Yes. And I've been glutting on it as well, to coin a pun there.
So it's a comedy then?
It's a rom-com, really.
A rom-com?
Not rom-com, zom-com. But it's also slightly romantic too, because she's got a really good relationship with her husband.
Yeah, you get a really good inside look at this couple and how they're dealing with suddenly the wife's a zombie and now they have to kill people. Oh.
And the husband's, it's a bit almost like, Stepford Wives in a way, because they are so perky and so sort of all American and apparently normal to the point of actually being insane, I think, in certain ways.
And he's not a zombie.
Did you see what he did with the toaster oven? They have some problems.
They have some problems, they really do. Robin, have you had a chance to see it?
No, I haven't seen it.
I'm only halfway through, I must admit.
Because it seems to veer away from what you say to the usual trap of zombie movies, which are basically one of my least favorite horror movies. Because, you know, if you're watching a vampire movie, they're about the vampire. A werewolf movie, it's about the werewolf. If you watch a zombie movie, 9 times out of 10, it's about the people who are trying to run away from the zombies, not the zombies themselves.
And they're all sort of a thing. They're all basically survival movies as well.
Yeah, they are.
But this is nothing like that at all.
One of my favourite Netflix...
See, now I'm interested.
One of my favourite Netflix shows is iZombie.
I love that one too.
There's another zombie kind of show that's about the zombie.
It is, exactly, and it's fun as well. It's enjoyable to watch.
Zombies are much more fun when they can talk.
Yeah.
And it's like a police procedural, that one, isn't it? Where she works in the morgue.
Reminds me a bit of Drew Calling, was it? There was one that used to be... Yeah, is that the right one, Alex? Alex is nodding. Where she worked in a morgue and she used to touch the bodies and get a flash of what happened.
I've not seen that.
And this zombie does that in iZombie. Because she eats the brains and she knows how the murder victims. Yeah, that's it.
And then helps solve their murder as kind of a payback for eating them.
Which is really cool, I think.
Yeah.
So, have you seen that one, Robin?
iZombie? No, but I've just made a note of it now.
Brilliant. That is, you love that. You will again, glut on it. And that's the word for the show today. You will glut on it. And talking of which, because it is a subject I did want to discuss with you guys, what do you think about this whole... I don't know whether you call it not an ethos, but a whole attitude we have to binge-watching series is now, which I'm terrible, I do it all the time. Yeah. What do you think of it?
I love it, personally. I think it's... For me, you know, I can sit there. I've got satellite TV with lots and lots and lots of channels, and to be honest, I can sit there and go through them all and not find anything that particularly appeals to me at that moment. But I love the idea that I can, you know, I'm watching the series called Black Sails at the moment, Pirates series, on Amazon. And Fiona and I can sit down at night, no matter what time it is, I eventually get sat down, finish work, kids are in bed. We can put the episode on when we're ready for it.
Yeah, and you can just wind down.
And if we want to watch the next one, we just let it play through and watch the next one. And I love that. I think it's kind of bringing TV to people when they want it. And it's allowing us to consume... I suppose the problem is you can end up in a bit of an echo chamber where you're only watching certain things, you're not kind of pushing the limits of what you'd usually watch and not experiencing new things, but there's so much out there, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. What about you, Patricia?
I like it. You can be really unhealthy with it.
Yeah.
Just like like anything, if you're binge watching things for several days in a row, you should probably stop and go outside.
Have a break. Have a break.
It's like if you're eating the entire giant tub of ice cream, you should probably stop and put it back in the freezer.
Walk away from the ice cream.
Yeah, or if you're binge drinking or binge anything-ing, it's not
but every now and then, I think it's good for your soul to eat a whole
Absolutely.
Bar of chocolate.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things that I think about it that makes me very aware is when I binge watch a series, I see its faults more.
Right.
Whereas when you watched an episode a week, I think you kind of forgot other things. But when you're watching things back to back, you go, oh, that doesn't really work with what they just did with it. Mm. You know, and things start to, you know, it does, the faults start to show, the cracks start to show bits sometimes, especially in long-running series. What about you, Robin?
Well, I'm guilty. I've been watching, binge-watching, actually, The Whispers on Sky.
That's one I don't know about, The Whispers.
It popped up as a pick of the week. It hasn't actually been picked up by any of their channels.
Right.
And if you do a search on, you know, Sky On Demand, it's called The Whispers, and it stars Lily Rabe, who's been in many of the
She's
American
great.
Horror Story
yeah.
movies, about children with an imaginary friend. But it's an alien entity, Ooh. And it's a 13-part series, and it really, really keeps the suspense up right until the end. Because this thing is possessing children to its will. And it's a little bit like, you know, Children of the Damned kind of thing.
Fantastic.
Only set in modern-day America. And Steve, my son, and I binge-watched that, and it was incredible because 13 hours... of complete suspense. But the only thing I find with binge-watching on-demand series or streaming is it kind of takes away what little social aspect there was in TV where you go to work or you meet your mates the next day and say, hey, did you watch that last night? No, I was watching one of the other 300 channels.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. And more on that very shortly. But first, we'll have Black Magic Woman. Santana.
This is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at @superheroIRL. Thanks so much.
Are you interested in video games? If so, be sure to join me, Jake, on the Cyber Den, your weekly dose of tech and games. Treat yourself to the latest news, interviews, some brilliant music, and much more. After all, it is approved by...
me, Duke Nukem.
Kane from Command & Conquer.
Agent 47.
Colonel Roy Campbell.
And more. So join me, Jake, on the Cyber Den every Wednesday, 10 till 12.
On Siren FM 107.3.
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, and you're listening to Sam Stone and Friends with the Stone Tapes on Siren FM.
And we're back. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
What is the view like from your castle at the moment? What have you been reviewing this week?
Well, carrying on with the downloads, one of the things that I've been watching this week is a documentary that I got on catch-up TV on Sky Atlantic. And it concerns an urban myth, which isn't really an urban myth. At this point, you're probably asking, what's he talking about? So let me tell you about Beware the Slender Man.
Slender Man, ooh.
Have you guys heard about the Slender Man?
No.
A little bit.
This is the same as me before I saw the documentary. I was kind of peripherally aware of it. Now, the Slender Man is an abnormally tall man wearing a dark suit. He has no face. He may or may not have about 6 tendrils coming out of his back. And he homes in usually on children. Okay.
So he's kind of a bogeyman type of
And his origins, his real life origins, seem to come from the tall man from the Phantasm movies, H.P. Lovecraft fiction, and also The Gentleman from the Hush episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's what I was thinking of when you mentioned it.
So scary.
Very creepy, weren't they?
That was one of the best episodes.
It was.
Anyway, he was created on June the 10th, 2009, on a thread on an internet forum which had a competition where users were challenged to edit everyday photographs to appear spooky, paranormal, some kind of horror, supernatural element to them. And a forum poster with the name Victor Surge contributed two black and white images of groups of children, and he photoshopped in a very tall, spectral skeleton kind of figure wearing a black suit. Now, he did something which nobody else did, and he added text to them, which said, one of them said, "We didn't want to go, we didn't want to kill them, but its persistent stance and outstretched arms horrified and comforted us at the same time. Credited 1983, photographer unknown, presumed dead." Mm. Cool. So, from these humble origins, people started to write fiction about the Slender Man. Mm. And a lot of it was fan fiction. And there were small snippets of narrative which could easily be copied and pasted from one website to another. And it became its own thing. It became like an urban legend. It became modern-day folklore. Mm. And people were adding to it. They even added a 16th-century Germanic origin to it.
Oh, fascinating.
And kids were reading this. And this is where the story actually takes a very, very sinister turn. Because on May 31st, 2014, two 12-year-old girls in Wisconsin held down and stabbed their best mate, classmate, 19 times. When they were questioned by the authorities, they said that they wanted to commit a murder as a first step to becoming proxies for the Slender Man, having read it online.
Mm.
Good grief.
And they thought they lured their best friend into a wooded area 19 times. They stabbed her with a kitchen knife. They
Sick.
Ran away, left her for dead. They also said that they were afraid that the Slender Man would kill their families if they didn't commit the murder. The victim, thankfully, crawled away from the woods where she'd been left. She reached the road and was helped, and she has survived the attack. Now, unsurprisingly, her friends have been diagnosed with a mental illness. Right. Mental illness. We saw in this documentary actual interrogation room footage when the two girls were interviewed. And the chilling part of it is there was absolutely no remorse.
Mm.
None. They didn't actually seem to see that there was anything wrong. But in the leading up to what they'd read online, they had been perfectly normal. One of the girls reportedly said that the Slender Man watched her, he could read her mind, he could teleport into a cell. But then again, her story kind of fell apart when she testified that she also conversed with Lord Voldemort and one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Which one, we don't know. In August, she was found incompetent to stand trial, and the whole trial was suspended until her condition improved. Now, in 2015, the presiding judge ruled that both girls could be tried as adults. The big difference here is, if they were tried as children, they would be out within about 4 years.
Yes.
As adults, they are facing 65 years in prison each.
Sounds like a wise judge.
Now, this trial actually happens this year, 2017.
Right.
But after hearing the story, several people have come forward and said that teenage daughters had attacked their parents with knives and had written macabre fiction involving the Slender Man. So
there is
a
something
phenomenon that's growing.
It's still out there by the sound of it.
He is still out there. But these two believed that he actually lived in a mansion in a forest that was a 20-mile drive away from where they lived. So it seems that they were actually adding to the legend themselves. So maybe the mental illness always was there, but they needed something to hang it on.
And on that thought...
Beware the Splendor Man.
Yeah. And on that thought, we'll have a little bit of Seven Devils, Florence and the Machines. Oh, and this is a packed show for you this month. I'd like to mention one thing before we move on to our film of the month, and that is the Stone Tape Symposium, which will be on, what date is that? The 19th of March, a Sunday. And if you are a member of the Lincoln University students, you are entitled to come to the event for free. If not, it's £10 a head. So if you fancy joining us on that day, we're going to have George, Patricia, David, myself, and Robin, all the way over from Wales. And
in
we will,
person.
In person, exactly. And we will be having with us the amazing Los Angeles actress, Daphne Ashbrook, there in person too.
All right.
So it's going to be fun. There'll be also Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens and the director extraordinaire, Graham Harper. And I've done that all off the top of my head, so how well.
Yeah,
I deserve a round of applause.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so, David isn't with us, sadly, today, because he's poorly. So, get well soon, David.
Absolutely. Best wishes.
But in your honour, we're still going to do the film of the month. And this month, we're going to talk about a film called The Resort. Now, The Resort... Yeah, with a Z. Yes, the S is not an S, it's a Z. It's R-E-Z-O-R-T. And it was made in 2015. It's a British zombie horror film directed by Steve Barker and written by Paul Gertensberg. And it stars Doug Ray Scott, Jessica DeGouve, I think, and Martin McCann. And this is quite an interesting story because it's based on after humanity wins a devastating war against zombies, the few remaining undead are kept in a secure island where they are hunted for sport. And I'm now going to pass this over to Robin because he's got some rather strong opinions about this one, haven't you, Robin?
Well, you know, again, zombie movies. They're just the means to an end. They're survivalist movies, usually. And when you guys suggested that I watch this one, I found it on Netflix, and I thought...
I can hear the sign in your voice even now, you know.
Oh, good Lord. It's Jurassic World with the undead. And it kind of is, but it kind of isn't, because it's not all the way kind of let's run away from the zombies and let's deal with our own introspective nonsense like The Walking Dead does for months on end when they're not walking anywhere.
The stationary dead.
And you get to a point where you actually want the zombies to do something because these people are the tits, aren't they? They really are the tits. They deserve to die, all of them. And, of course, things will go awry and the hunters become the hunted. And I enjoy that aspect.
Yes.
The acting was all right. But what intrigued me most was the fact that it was directed by Steve Barker. Now, years ago, when he made his first film called Outpost,
I
interviewed Steve for Gorezone magazine back in my pre-Starburst days. And we had a good conversation, and he told me that one of the things that made him want to go into the movies was the old lurid videotape covers that we had in the 1980s.
Right.
Where they promised way more than the film could ever deliver. And one of these was a film which had Peter Cushing in it, in basically a cameo role, called Shockwaves. And the cover, which I remember well, had a Nazi stormtrooper sort of all pruned up, rising up from the sea, wearing what appeared to be aviator goggles. And he'd spent a long time looking at that in his video store, being too young to rent it.
Right.
I remember seeing it myself, though I wasn't too young to rent it. And he said, that's what made him want to make zombie movies.
It's very cool.
And in Outpost, he actually referenced that because he had a waterlogged German zombie, sloshing around with his goggles on. And there's a scene in this, and I don't really want to say where it is, but there's a scene in this where there are masses of waterlogged zombies.
And there are.
As soon as I saw them, I thought, Steve, you got your army of zombies coming out of the sea.
And
finally.
We're almost out of time. So thanks so much to Robin. Thank you so much to George Mann, Patricia H. Ash, and our producer, Alex Levchuk. Until next time, goodbye. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
In the sleep.